BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
I'm Lauren Laverne, and this is the Desert Island Discs podcast. Every week, I ask my guests to choose the 8 tracks, book, and luxury they'd want to take with them if they were cast away to a desert island. For rights reasons, the music is shorter than the original broadcast. I hope you enjoy listening. My castaway this week is Jacqueline de Rojas, one of the most influential women in the digital sector. She's been described as a titan of tech. She began her career as a troubleshooter for blue chip companies in the mid-1980s. These days, she is president of Tech UK, the body representing 900 companies in the digital sector. And last year, she received a CBE for her contribution to the industry. In 2019, even the Luddites among us are starting to understand how crucial to the country's fortunes tech is. It's growing twice as fast as the wider economy and is worth around £184 billion a year. So how do we make sure this vital economic organ remains in rude health, especially as it's one of the few sectors where job supply outstrips demand? Well, the woman who speaks on its behalf wants to open it up to women and BAME workers, but also to those returning to work, to people with caring commitments, autism spectrum disorders, and to ex-service personnel. She says technology can be the great equaliser. It shouldn't matter who you are, where you're from, or what resources you have access to. Tech presents an immense opportunity, providing you have the skills. Imaginations can run wild and boundaries no longer exist. Jacqueline de Rojas, welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you.
So I quoted you there saying that tech can be the great equaliser rather than it is a small but crucial difference there.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's your opportunity to grasp, isn't it? And I think we as a country have been probably the most prolific country in terms of digital adoption. We're the biggest e-commerce market in the world, aside from America and China. And you think, wow, okay, if we can create an e-commerce opportunity as users that way, then surely we can also create that as constructors of technology and innovation.
You became president of Tech UK in 2015 and have called diversity and inclusion your favourite subjects. So let's talk about them. Women make up less than a quarter of the UK's tech workforce, occupy fewer than one in 10 leadership roles. There is a huge gender gap there. How do we begin to tackle it?
It wasn't always this way, you know. You look at NASA and we had female computer programs. In fact, it was the domain of women. So we lost it. And we have come to a place where 17% of women in tech, 10% in cyber, 6% in engineering is absolutely unacceptable. And certainly when I look at the industry today, women are not attracted or inspired by it necessarily. And I think it's because it's the domain of men or a male culture.
And where did that come from? You said we had it and then we lost it. I mean, how?
Yeah, I think, honestly, it's probably the advent of the first personal computer. All of the advertising was super male dominated. And it started to become very much a male thing to have a PC. And women just suddenly weren't attracted to using the computer. It was the domain of men.
So what's the answer then? How do we start to change the culture?
I don't think there's any one answer. Firstly, I would say we need to inspire girls at a much younger age. If we were starting a football team of significance, we would scout at age 5, 6. But in tech, we expect people to rock up fully formed at age 18 plus. And I think we need to scout much younger.
It's time to go to the music, Jacqueline. Tell us about your first disc today.
My first disc is This Girl Is On Fire by Alicia Keys. And the reason I chose it is I am not great at acknowledging compliments. And I'm much better at giving than receiving, I would say. So having grown up in a male-dominated technology industry, I spent my career striving to equal the playing field for women. And this, for me, is my girl anthem. You can try, but you'll never forget her name. She's on top of the world. Hottest of the hottest girls. Say, oh, we gotta be.
Oh, this girl is on fire.
Absolutely fantastic. Alicia Keys, girl on fire. Jacqueline de Rojas, the AME representation is another large part of what's been called the diversity deficit. According to one recent report, just 8% of senior leaders are from a minority background. How do you feel about that statistic?
I think it's depressing, frankly. We have 1 in 4 of our students are from ethnic backgrounds, and yet we don't see that reflected in the workforce. So we're quite happy to educate, but we're not quite so happy to employ, you know, and especially at leadership levels. So we definitely need to have more leaders who look like the people we want to attract. You know, there is a question of, do we need to put some quotas in there for diversity? I'd like to see shortlists for diverse candidates so that we have a complete lineup of all voices in the room. The question to ask ourselves is, where are the others? When I join a board or I join a team, the first thing I do is take a mental photograph of the team at the top and a mental photograph of the team at the bottom and a mental photograph of the market. And if there's a mismatch, it's pretty obvious.
You're a member of the government's Digital Economy Council and you advise the business part of government about what your industry needs. And as we're talking today, Brexit is 5 weeks away and things are still quite unclear. But as things stand, what are your thoughts about the potential impact of Brexit?
We certainly need certainty. We need to be able to make preparations for whether we are going to go it alone or not. The one thing we have an advantage in the technology sector is that we have a mobile and flexible workforce, so we can work wherever we are. On the other hand, we do need to have trade deals in terms of data, and we need to have agreements in terms of security. And I think perhaps our biggest issue is access to talent. If the borders are arguably closing and our domestic talent pipeline is quite low, then we need to figure out how we're going to create more opportunity inside the country by getting more talent into the country post-Brexit. That is probably our biggest challenge.
Tell us about your second disc. Why have you chosen this?
Sugar Sugar by the Archies. It just reminds me of childhood. I remember living in a council estate in Swindon and a young lad called Stuart who sat on the washing line walls, communal washing line walls, and he would belt out this song. And it just feels to me like the mournful cry of a young man wanting to be something more than he was. And that's exactly where I was at that time.
Sugar.
Sugar Sugar by the Archies. Jacqueline de Rojas, you were born Jacqueline Yu in 1962 in Folkestone in Kent. What sort of childhood did you have?
I was brought up above my father's Chinese restaurant in the High Street in Folkestone, and he was a violent man. So my mother was a punch bag for whenever things went wrong for him. And I didn't want to be the person that he focused his attention on. So I think I spent my childhood being quite insignificant on purpose. We were quite religious. We went to church a lot. I think probably more out of safety and security than anything else. But it was a miserable childhood. And I think you build a sort of resilience around yourself, which means that you don't often ask for help. And that has carried with me right throughout my adult life.
In 1966, you moved to Swindon. Your mother managed to get away. How did that happen?
The Catholic priest, Father Walmsley, gave her money to escape. And we packed our bags and we ran away to my mother's parents. And my mother remarried a few years later to my stepfather.
And was that a happier situation for you to be in?
It was happy for my mother because she found someone who would take on 2 half-Chinese children and her. He was not a very fatherly stepfather, and that made life very tricky.
So you had a lot of challenges going on. And how would you describe yourself as a child?
I think I was very good at school. I loved the structure of school. I was smarter than I wanted to reveal. I think. When I was 16, I had my GCSE results in my hand, and my stepfather took them out of my hand and he opened them. He wasn't particularly well educated himself. And he said, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to show me up?
You've done well.
Yeah. And in that moment, I think there are times when there is a fork in the road. And for me, it was that moment where I thought, yes, I am going to show you how much potential I can unlock.
So who or what helped you during these difficult times? Because it sounds like an experience where you were pretty isolated.
I flew into the arms of my teaching staff, I think, at school. So I loved my netball teacher, Mrs. Culling, and I loved the nuns at school. It felt very safe to be there.
Nuns are interesting, aren't they, as role models? Single, educated women. Did you aspire to be in higher education, to go into higher education?
I didn't, but I did always think I should be a nun so I could get rid of my Chinese surname and stop the bullying. I did sort of think, wouldn't it be great to be called Sister Jacqueline?
Tell me about the bullying.
Well, when you've got a surname like you, you can imagine it was, or you come here and, you know, in the playground, it was incessant, actually. And in the end, it was just white noise and I blocked it out. But it was tough. My brother and I were the only half Chinese children in the school. I didn't realise I was half Chinese until I actually got to school.
It's time for your next track. It's your third disc today. Tell me about this one, Jacqueline. Why have you chosen it?
So I've chosen China Girl by David Bowie. Firstly, because I didn't realise I was Chinese until I went to school. So it's kind of my own personal anthem, if you like. But also because David Bowie is someone who has reinvented himself so many times in such great ways and radical ways. And I rather feel that I have also done that in my life.
China Girl by David Bowie. I believe, Jacqueline de Rocas, that also takes you back to a short dabbling with punk, with a punk look for you.
I did have a very short period where I was totally in love with punk music and I did dress as a punk for a while.
Spiky hair?
Spiky hair, but I could put it down when I wanted to.
Very sensible. So, Jacqueline de Rocas, in 1980, you began your university education with a course in business, and that took you to South Germany. Where did you get the confidence to apply to study abroad from?
Actually, if I'm absolutely honest, it was about how could I get as far away from home as possible. And I literally found a leaflet in the library, and it said, would you like to study for a degree in European business? I didn't really know what Europe was then, and it also said, would you be prepared to study for a couple of years overseas? And I thought, wow, this is actually also a major opportunity for me and to completely change my surroundings. So I thought, yeah, let's do it. I was quite brave, I thought.
Were you apprehensive about being there on your own?
No, I wasn't apprehensive about that. I had applied to go to the Champagne region of France to do my degree. But of course, I did tick the little box which said if I didn't get that course, would I also be prepared to go to Germany? And it was nothing like my vision of what university was going to be like.
In what way was it different?
Well, it was different because it was very Germanic and not very French. And I had this romantic notion that I was going to sort of have fizz and fly through university.
Reading books under trees, that kind
exactly.
of thing.
And it wasn't like that. No, it was sauerkraut and sausages. When I got there, I don't know why I thought this, but I thought only the German language lecture was going to be entirely in German. And when I realised that also productions, management, marketing and everything else was in German, that was a bit of a shock. I needed to do some work.
A great deal happened in your life in the mid-80s after university. You got your first job in tech, you got married, so you became Jacqueline Jones. It sounds like life was coming together very quickly. How did that feel from your point of view?
What I wanted to do when I first came back to London was I wanted to be a newscaster on the BBC. That was my big ambition. Sadly, they didn't come knocking, and to this day, I cannot understand why.
Maybe today's the day. You should walk through that department on the way out.
Maybe today's the day. But what happened was I was offered a job in technology recruitment and I took it and grasped it with both hands. And I loved it, actually. I loved putting people into technology roles. And after 2 years, I went to work for my largest client.
Your biggest ambition, though, to be a newsreader. Why?
I thought it would be so interesting to declare something of significance on the news. I don't know, declare peace or maybe even war. I don't know. I always thought newscasters were great storytellers. And to me, storytelling really matters.
Time to go to the music, Jacqueline. Tell us about the next piece we're going to hear.
My fourth disc is Lily Was Here. It's an instrumental with Dave Stewart and an amazing saxophonist. And I just love the interplay of where the guitar speaks, the saxophone responds. And I am an aspiring saxophonist myself. So I love, love, love this piece.
By Dave Stewart with Candy Dulfer on sax. Jacqueline de Rochas, you started in tech recruitment and then moved to a British software company that needed a German speaker. And it was there that you really discovered what you were good at, troubleshooting.
Yes, I really went through a very long period of self-reflection. And I asked myself a simple question, which was, what am I really good at? And when I stripped everything away and boiled it all down, I thought, actually, I'm great at solving problems. But more than that, it was about the ability to see friction in the system. For example, communication. Mostly when there is friction in conversation, it's because the other person simply wants to be heard. And I think when you give people space, you can give them space to be amazing. And I created that environment. And I am so grateful that I branded myself that way in this industry because it's given me so much opportunity.
By 1999, you were in a senior position at quite a large company and you had a decade of experience under your belt. But when you went for a promotion that you felt you were more than qualified for, you were turned down. Why?
Well, I was told, I asked for feedback actually, and I was told, Jacqueline, we simply don't have women on the leadership team. And yeah, that was a really big moment. And I'm a big believer in there is always a miracle if you look hard enough. And I had to look pretty hard in this scenario. And what I realised was that actually the miracle here was at least he told me. Because if I'd been there for another 5 years banging my head against the glass ceiling, I think I would have been distraught. So I went and got myself a job as a managing director somewhere else. And what was really funny, I then suffered from imposter syndrome because I got a job as a managing director. And then I sat in this big office with an assistant outside, a bar in the corner and a big boardroom table inside my office. And I thought, God, I don't actually know what a managing director does. And so I made the decision that what I was going to do was every time someone came in and asked me to make a decision about something, I would say no and ask for more information.
And how did that work out as a strategy?
It worked out really well because I then got into asking very basic questions like, what outcome are you looking for? Why are you here? What are you trying to create? And so it served me well to be more consultative.
It's time to go to the music. Your fifth disc today. Tell us about this one.
This is for my daughter, Stephanie. Roberta Flack, the first time ever I saw your face, because I remember having to grow up pretty quickly when I realised that I was now looking after this little bundle of joy. And she lay there looking at me and I just felt totally, deeply, completely in love with her.
The first time ever I saw your face,
spot the sun rose in your eyes, and the moon and the stars.
The first time ever I saw your face by Roberta Flack, a beautiful song, Jacqueline de Rojas, for your daughter who's grown up loving music.
She absolutely has. She's performing as Carmen in Fame, the musical. So I am so proud of her.
So your daughter was born during your second marriage, and that's where your surname comes from.
My Colombian husband, yeah, who was my best friend and still is. So we had a delightfully short and crazy time salsering our way through the 90s.
By 1999, after a bit of salsering, you were managing director at Informix. What sort of manager were you back then?
Gosh, I would say there's probably people out there who wish they hadn't worked for me. I was a bit of an alphazilla, I would say.
An alphazilla?
Thinking I had to behave like a man in order to make it. And I was very directional. I was very clear about how we were going to grow and scale the business. Probably all the great ideas came from me. I learnt that I didn't need to be quite that aggressive. I had to let other people in, and that maybe soft edges would serve me better.
And how important is preparation to you? I mean, obviously doing a lot of self-development, you know, thinking about the way that you present yourself in a work context. Not everybody does all of those things. Is that a character trait of yours?
I love to think that I do things effortlessly, elegantly, but that's an aspiration. What actually happens behind the scenes is I do an awful lot of preparation. And I think that's because my fear of failure is so incredibly high.
And does it ever hamper you, that fear of failure?
Yeah, of course, because sometimes I don't take risks. I don't take risks soon enough. Absolutely, of course it does. But I also think that perhaps when I put that hand in hand with my resilience, if I prepare and I do, for some reason, not get it right, I also have this opportunity to reframe it as a learning. So it never really manifests itself as failure.
A quote from you, Jacqueline de Rojas: I worship at the altar of efficiency. How close, I wonder, have you come to the Holy Grail?
Gosh, efficiency is just my Bible, really. Honestly, I can't bear it if someone walks past the ironing left at the bottom of the stairs at home. Why would anyone walk past that? Why would you not do something immediately? And so, yeah, I do worship at that altar, and I wished everyone else in my household also worshipped at that altar.
Don't they?
No.
And how do they feel about your religious proclivities, re-efficiency?
They love poking me in the eye, frankly, and they will walk past it specifically because I say, don't walk past it.
Time for some music. This is your sixth disc to do.
My mother is one of my biggest role models, and this is for her. She has dementia. So I find that quite difficult to talk about. Not because I don't want to recognise it, but I find it hard not to have her the way she was. So this is for her.
The finest years I ever knew. I hated with you.
Everything I Own by Bread for your mum, Jacqueline de Rojas. So many of the big conversations in tech at the moment are around AI, and this is an area where you see diversity as being extremely and particularly important. Why?
Algorithms are making decisions about so many things for us today, whether you get a mortgage, whether you get a place at university, whether you get benefits. These are all decided by algorithms, machines, robots, whatever you want to call them. And we've got to decide who regulates, who says that the algorithm is safe or not. And my contention, which was helped by Dr. Larissa Suzuki, a very young data scientist, who said to me, well, the only way is not to regulate through government policy necessarily, because we're creating too much of AI too quickly. The only way to properly regulate is to have all our voices at the table so that we all do the right thing for everybody. And that's why diversity in technology really matters.
And what would you say to someone listening to this thinking, oh, I don't care who designs the tech that I use. I mean, it's not if I can see them, you know, what difference does it make to me? What would you say to them?
Well, I would say, you know, for example, when the seatbelt was invented, women and children died, and they died because it was invented by men of a certain weight and height. That's why it matters.
Now, recently we heard Facebook described in a parliamentary committee report as digital gangsters. And day after day, we hear these headlines about fake news, misuse of data, grooming, that's online abuse of MPs. How do you think your industry should respond to these criticisms and to calls for increased regulation?
Well, thankfully, Facebook and other platforms have said that they are going to make changes to the way in which they use data. And I think what we've got to do is to shine a light on that and make sure that it happens, and it happens at pace. I would like to see much more privacy in the hands of the individual. We have to, as individuals, also be clear about what we want to have out there and have control over that. And I think we will need regulation, but I think we need regulation together with the platform providers themselves, because you've got to have that partnership in order to make it work.
I think the difficult thing for people to understand is the idea that regulation is too complicated. In a world and a sector that can produce driverless cars and algorithms that can make, you know, really important decisions about our lives and, you know, all of the kind of amazing advances we've seen with robotics and medicine and all that sort of stuff, why can't we create an algorithm that shields our children from inappropriate images online? You know, why can't we use technology to solve some of the problems of technology?
And I think that's where we're headed. I think we absolutely are going to use and do use technology to shield the audiences from some of those things. The trouble is that things morph and change online so fast that catching everything all the time is tricky. Having said that, I think we need to try a lot harder and we need to have a much more focused effort on making it happen.
Time to go to the music, Jacqueline. Tell me about this one. Why have you chosen it?
This one really makes me smile a lot. It's for my husband, Roger, my third and final husband. And I walked down the aisle to this piece of music by Ennio Morricone. And I am so grateful for him and everything he does for me.
Kimai by Ennio Morricone. Taking you back, Jacqueline Dorchus, to your third and final wedding. Marriage brought stepchildren and you're now a grandmother. How are you enjoying that?
Oh, baby Harvey. He's so gorgeous. I'm so happy to be a granny, and my stepsons are just incredible people. And their other halves too.
You've said in the past, we're all role models, whether we choose to be or not. What do you most want people to learn from you?
I think that resilience is a really wonderful virtue, but that opportunity comes from revealing vulnerabilities. And that's something I wished I could have told my younger self. I learned very late in life to be able to show my weaknesses and ask for help.
And what would you say to a young girl who's listening to this and wants a job in the tech sector, wants to do the kinds of work that you have?
I would say, find someone that can network with you into the industry, will just tell you about it. I work very closely with the Girl Guiding Association, and that is so special because it's girls of all ages from 8 upwards, And we've just introduced some STEM badges, science, technology and engineering badges, maths. And the first badge, for example, is Consent Online. And it goes right up to AI, artificial intelligence. And it's so exciting. And they can do these in a paper-based way, so it's accessible for everybody. And they just learn something in a girl-friendly environment where they're not intimidated. So it's brilliant.
I'm surely going to be casting you away, as you know. How are your life skills? Do you think you could build a shelter, feed yourself, that kind of thing?
I think I'd need some girl guiding badges before I go in terms of building a campfire and building a shelter. But I'll get there.
It's time to go to the music for your final disc, Jacqueline de Rojas. Why have you chosen it?
I've chosen Perfect Symphony by Ed Sheeran and Andrea Bocelli. This was a moment for my family. We were at Wembley with Ed Sheeran at his concert last summer. And family and relationships mean absolutely everything to me, not having had a great family life myself. And so what we've created is very close, it's very supportive. And we all felt this moment of joy when Ed Sheeran was singing Perfect Symphony with Andrea Bocelli.
When you said you looked a mess, I whispered underneath my breath, but you heard it, darling, you look perfect tonight. Sei la mia donna, la forza delle onde del mare, cogli i miei sogni, i miei segreti, molto di più.
Perfect Symphony by Ed Sheeran and Andrea Bocelli. Jacqueline, I give you the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare to read on the island. You can also take another book of your choosing with you. What would you like?
I would like to take Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier. I've read it 1,000 times. There's all the romance, there's all the disappointment. It's just a book of extremes and I just love it.
You can also have a luxury item. What would yours be?
I think it would have to be my saxophone. I would have time to learn. No one could witness my failure. And I think that's quite important. And also, I think it would be terribly useful for other things. I'm sure I could collect rainwater in it if I needed to. And maybe the glint of it would attract a passing plane that might rescue me. All sorts of things, really.
No, it sounds like a great idea. You may have it.
Thank you.
And finally, which track of the eight would you rush to save from the waves?
Oh, I think that would have to be my girl anthem, the Alicia Keys Girl on Fire, for the sisterhood, for the man ambassadors out there all fighting for diversity and inclusion.
Jacqueline de Rojas, thank you very much for sharing your Desert Island Discs with us.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jacqueline. I like the idea of her belting out This Girl's on Fire while on the island, when she's not practicing her saxophone, that is. Other digital ambassadors and innovators who've been cast away include Dr. Sue Black, AI specialist Demis Hassabis, Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates, and Wikipedia founder Jimmy Wales. In 2014, Kirsty spoke to computer scientist Dame Wendy Hall.
I want to ask you about this system. Now, I don't want to get this wrong. You can explain it to him in a second. It was something that you and your team at Southampton were responsible for. It was called Microcosm.
Yep.
Explain to me what it was and what you did that was so pioneering and important, because it was.
Well, first of all, it predates the web, but not the internet. But this was the late 80s when I was beginning to see the potential of what we call multimedia now.
So it's clicking links, it's watching content,
exactly.
It's all that thing we do every day, all the time.
I got into the idea of hypermedia. Now, we do that all the time because of the web today, but in those days, it was research labs only. It was very pioneering. So we set about designing a system that would enable people to create links between lots of different multimedia content. And I had this idea that the links should be separate from the documents. So you might link your name to a picture of you and say, you know, this is a picture of Kirsty. That's the semantic relationship, rather than just a pointer to another file. And in an essence, that was the pioneering piece. And we first demoed that system in 1989. I came back from the most wonderful sabbatical in University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, with lots of ideas. And 1989 was the year that Tim Berners-Lee specified the web to his bosses in CERN. So it was all happening at the same time, but our system was out there before there was a web.
Did it feel tangibly exciting? Did you feel like you were at the forefront?
Yeah, yes. I think so. I just knew this was the way the world was going to go. I didn't think about the mobile devices we might have. I just knew that the idea that we'd have machines that would help us find information from a global network of computers was going to revolutionise everything.
I read you say that you didn't so much face a glass ceiling as a glass wall. What do you mean by that?
I did. I think I faced several glass ceilings. I mean, you know, in the 80s, it was really hard in the world of science and engineering then to succeed as a woman. Also in the university world as well. I remember when I was put on my first committee at the university and I walked in and I was the only woman. I was yet still then a young lecturer. And I walked into the room and it was full of men and the chair was an engineering professor. And he said, oh, look up, lads, there's a woman in the room. You know, and you think, oh, OK, well, what are you going to do if I'm not here? Tell dirty jokes? I don't know. And, you know, then I was the first female professor of engineering at Southampton. I had a lot of support from the dean at the time. But then I was the only female professor of engineering for ages. But now I feel I've got through some of the glass ceilings, but there's still a wall. I still see rooms that are full of men that I can't get into.
Still?
Yeah.
Even though you're a member of the Royal Society and so on and so on.
Well, the number of times you still see a meeting, not just in my world of engineering, but in big business, in government, in there's so many worlds where it's still a room full of men.
Dame Wendy Hall. My guest next week will be the actor Martin Freeman. He's a huge music fan, so I can promise you some excellent tracks. Do join us then.
You know the way late at night, in bed, in the dark, your tired mind can wander and strange thoughts float like balloons escaping into the sky? Well, Bunk Bed is a podcast where Peter Curran and Patrick Marber find the nearest faraway place from the hurly-burly of daily life where tired minds can wander. Why don't you come along and eavesdrop and see if you like it? You can subscribe to Bunk Bed on BBC Sounds.